Hello everyone, it's Tom Price here. Welcome to a brand new episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Just to give you a bit of a heads up, in this episode, if you are any audio files, not as in audio files like .mp3, but audio files as in P-H-I-L-E-S, don't worry, the episode will start in a sec. You're going to get annoyed about the sound quality in this episode. Sorry, there were some technical issues, i.e. I was an idiot. So it sounds a little bit medium wave at times. So if you can imagine, I'm interviewing the fabulous Emily Leary, but it's the 70s and you're playing with your mum and dad's radio, that might help. So normal service will be resumed soon. It's a cracking episode. Enjoy, lots of love.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, welcome back to My Mate Bought a Toaster. My name's Tom Price. You all know that stuff. But here's the interesting bit. Today, joining me on My Mate Bought a Toaster, I've got a fabulous guest. She's called Emily Leary. She's a multi-award-winning food, lifestyle, parenting writer, presenter, and photographer. Emily, that is many strings to a lovely bow you've got going on there.
Just any excuse to buy more kit, I think.
Yeah, well, hopefully we're going to see that as we go through your house, just endless photography kit. Are you quite hooked on buying gadgetry?
Kitchen gadgets more, but yeah, I like new gadgets in boxes. I don't make unboxing videos, but maybe I'm missing a trick because of the amount of silly gadgets I buy.
Yeah, the unboxing videos are such a delight to watch. It was kind of Apple, wasn't it, who first made that a thing where you would open the iPod and it was this box that unfolded itself and it just said made in California in front of you and you were like, imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it used to be an inconvenience having to take things out of the packaging, but now that's part of the excitement. It's huge with kids as well, just unwrapping toys that are just designed to be fun to unwrap. You know, once you've got everything out of the packet, there is nothing left to do with the toy, but kids just love watching things being unwrapped.
They do also see kids magazines and newsagents.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, the passion and the conviction which they have that they have to have that Fireman Sam magazine, and you're like, you are going to read the magazine, right? You're not just you're not just getting it for the giant water pistol on the front, no. And then they just, it's all they want is a water pistol. It's so annoying.
Yeah, and then you keep a stack of these kind of comics and magazines because they are going to read them, and then eventually they go in the recycling because they never looked at them.
No, I know. So frustrating. anyway, we'll bitch about our kids later on. Before that, though, we're going back in time, okay, Emily? We're going back to your first ever order on Amazon. Do you have any idea when that was?
Well, as you'll have noticed when you logged in, it's my old surname. So I've been on Amazon quite a long time, probably early 2000s.
Yeah, 2001, Emily Bennett. As you were back then. You bought the York Notes Advanced. Yes! Cheating. To the Alchemist by Ben Jonson. What an absolute snore fest that was.
Do you know, I used to buy York Notes quite a lot, and it's not, you'll know this, it is not the done thing at university.
No.
You're supposed to leave that behind at A-level. And I actually referenced York Notes in one of my film studies assignments.
Oops.
And my tutor was livid. He marked me down. It was York Notes taxi driver.
Yeah.
Oh, he was furious.
But it's annoying because he will have ignored the content of what you were actually saying in the essay.
Yeah.
But just the very act of saying York Notes, and that's it, you're done for.
Yeah, I think he wrote, this isn't A-level.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about me going to uni is I actually left school when I was 12. So I studied at home and studied at home as much as you do when you're 12.
Yeah.
And then I went to college part-time to get my qualifications, mostly with kind of people who didn't want to be there. And I expected uni to be like it is in kind of like film set in the 1920s. I thought everybody would be super academic and walking around with piles of books.
Or on bikes. Everyone's on a bike.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was not the case.
So hang on, tell me please about this. Why did you, so you were homeschooled?
Yeah, from 12, yeah.
You must be laughing at the from the bottom of your heart at everyone who's suffering during homeschooling now then.
Yeah, well, I'm laughing, but I also feel really bad for my mum because I'm now finding out what it's like to be in charge of a child all the time and be responsible for teaching them. Yeah. So yeah, thanks, Mum. Yeah. Sorry.
So how come you ended up being homeschooled? What was the story there?
I'm just a bit weird. I didn't really fit in at school.
Is that right? Is that true?
Yeah, I really, you know, primary school, they kind of let you live your life and yes. sort of wander off and play with the glue a bit and no one really cares. Mm. And then I went to secondary school and academically I've always been capable, but like socially and in terms of adhering to a very institutionalized environment, oh, I was terrible, really miserable.
Really?
And so my mum, being quite the hippie, said, study at home. So I did.
And where was that? Where did you grow up?
Lincoln.
Right.
Yay, Lincoln.
Yay, Lincoln. So was it quite an idyllic, was it rural then, that a rural part of Lincoln? Or in the actual city?
Kind of 5 miles outside. I think I hated Lincoln growing up yeah. because it didn't have a university yet. It basically had just like one high street with hardly anything on it, lots of clothes shops and a castle at the top. So when I said I was from Lincoln, people would go, oh, a lovely castle. I was like, yeah, but that's not where you spend your teen years. The rest of the high street was just nothing. There wasn't a university yet. There was nothing to do. Everybody was about 20 years behind the rest of the country in terms of fashion and knowledge and knowing what was going on in the outside world. So it was quite a kind of backwards town. So I was quite embittered and desperate to escape. Whereas now I look and I think, oh, it's nice and small and quiet. How lovely. Maybe we should move there.
I know. It's such a tipping point. Do you live in the city now? Where are you now?
We lived just outside Nottingham, so which is kind of a compromise. So we lived in London until we had kids. Mm. And then Nottingham was going to be a kind of halfway house before we got back into London. But we've been here since 2012, so I don't think we're leaving.
No, so nice. Beautiful part of the world. Beautiful part of the world. That's fascinating that you wanted to be homeschooled. And it sounds so idyllic as well, just like... You can imagine you having all that time to yourself at home. And stuff. I mean, did you get on with your mum? Was she a good home tutor? Did you do it all yourself?
Yeah, so I was quite, how can I put this politely? I was a massive nerd. Mm. So in order to get my mum to let me homeschool, over the summer between the first and the second year, I filled Leverarch folders with like projects and investigations and cut stuff out of books and... do you remember those weekly, I think they were called Discovery or something, but it was little A4 cardboard envelopes that had kind of information about a different topic, like the Tudors.
Yeah.
So I copied all them out pretty much wholesale just to prove I was interested in history.
Yeah.
and like presented this massive folder and said, look how driven I can
you
be.
You made the case because you really wanted to be homeschooled, didn't you? You didn't want to go to school.
No, I mean, I was quite lucky because I've got two older siblings and they had quite cool friends.
Yes.
So I knew that if I was hanging around, I was still going to get plenty of people to hang out with and things to do.
Yes, this is true. I have two older siblings as well. And I still have that now. I kind of don't need my friends. I just hung out with their friends who didn't really like me because I was 8 and 10 years younger than them all. But I still just kind of was like, oh, I've got my friends, you know, who's 20 or something.
Do you find that you still expect to be the youngest in your friendship group? Because I'm 37 and I still expect... to be the baby, and obviously yes. I'm not now, but I kind of expect to be the one that's kind of like, oh, Emily doesn't know what she's talking about. I must do by now.
I know exactly that. I just assume I'm the youngest. And do you know what? Just this weekend, just gone, Emily, I had my 40th birthday, mm-hmm. and it's incredibly shocking. It shocks you to your core because there is now actual empirical evidence that I am no longer young. Because up until that point, exactly that it tended to be the people I worked with, the people I knew, social groups. My wife's 2 years older than me. All her friends are older than me. I'm just the young one. People go, God, you're born in 1980. That's impossible. And then in the last few years, as I head towards 40, I've worked with quite a lot of younger people writing on comedy shows and stuff. And I've become this sort of old cantankerous man. And it's really flipped my self-image because I've always yeah. been the young one. It's a really strange moment. So, yeah, being the youngest of three siblings, it fucks you up for life, Emily. Absolutely.
Have you done school teachers' evenings yet?
Oh, well. I have, and the horrifying thing about that is that the teachers they're like 24.
Yeah, they're babies.
But you still call them Mr. Field or whatever. Like it's yes. I am so scared of Mr. Field. What about you? Have you had the experience yourself then?
Yeah, so my son, just before lockdown, had his first, yeah, kind of parent-teacher conference. And you take the kids round with you, which I wasn't expecting. But yes, acting sort of slightly scared and deferential to, like, these 22-year-old teachers was really odd. I suddenly felt like I should be telling them off.
Yes.
Very strange.
Well, let's go back and let's find out what you were doing maybe when you were 22. Actually, no, you would have been younger than 22. On the 29th of December, 2002, you bought Rayman 1 and 2 collection for the PlayStation. So really great homeschooling there, really good stuff.
So very important to hang on to your platform gaming youth. Yes. Even when everybody else has moved on to 3D games by that point. So everybody was getting really into the kind of quite complicated worlds. And even Mario had gone, like, N64 had gone to 3D by then, but I wasn't ready. I wanted to stick with the platform games. I'm still not ready. I actually played a text adventure the other day and I was very happy.
Oh my God. I'm so happy. This is definitely a generational thing that you've done. I said to someone only about 2 years ago, I was ranting saying, I don't have any computer games in my life because it's not platform anymore. And he said, you need to get Rayman. You need to get the Adventures of Rayman because it's the only one. And now I've got my son's got a Switch, so we've got Mario. It's all about the platform games. I'm sorry, but Mario going 3D, that was our generation's Dylan going electric.
It is really unpleasant. The whole kind of dual Joy-Con, so you're moving with both thumbs in a 3D way, which obviously, you know, my son can do it. He can play Fortnite and I can't. I just walk into a tree and then get stuck. And he's like, why are you staring at the floor? Because I don't understand this controller.
Our brains aren't made that way. So hang on, in 2002, how old were you at this point, 2002?
20.
Right, so you're at uni at this point?
Yes.
Okay, was it weird going into formal education and having been homeschooled?
Yes, guess what I did when halfway through uni?
Left. Goodbye, Sheffield. Cheerio.
And I switched. I took all my credits and I transferred them to the Open University and I worked while finishing my degree. Gosh. Because again, you can't pin me down for long.
No, well, there I am at the beginning of this podcast saying, wow, look at you, Emily. Look at all the different things you do. Basically, you've got professional ADHD. That's okay, isn't it?
I absolutely have. My CV is hilarious. Nothing stays. But it also allowed me to kind of climb up the ladder. So I used to work in marketing and I'd kind of stick somewhere for 6 months in a kind of consultant's basis.
Yeah.
And then I would move on to somewhere else. But because of my experience at the previous place, yeah, I would move on slightly higher. And so I was kind of, I was employed way above my ability really young.
Oh, really? Do you think people liked the fact that you dropped out of uni? Because I always think employers, they're quite attracted to people who do that because it means you've got backbone and steel and determination and all those qualities.
Well, yeah, I think, there was a little bit of nepotism involved because my sister is older and she'd already gone into kind of marketing and PR. She already had lots of connections in kind of writing jobs. So I was able to wheedle my way into some quite good companies and get a bit of writing work really early. So it was possible for me to leave and essentially get the kind of job I should have got after uni while still studying. So for quite a while, I was wheeled out, I think, in various jobs as the kind of, you know, like show pony kind of young protege, like, look, she knows so much already and she's only 21.
She's completed Rayman 2. Oh my God.
Yeah, I dined out on that for quite a while.
Yeah. Where we're going, we'll be showing that we listen to toast, cause these lovely ass people gonna talk to the host.
He's gonna ask a couple questions,
what they're buying the most, cause one man goddamn just likes a piece of toast.
2004, Emily Leary, we've got still Emily Bennett at this point, FYI. Or are you?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, still Emily Bennett.
Okay, so we've got Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Jim Carrey. I love that film.
I love that film so much. So I saw it with my boyfriend I was with for about 3 years, so my first proper boyfriend. And I just remember being so struck by the ending. Spoilers, but if you haven't seen it by now. Just being so struck by the ending and that kind of decision to be in a relationship, even if it's painful. And my relationship at the time wasn't, but my next relationship was terrible. So maybe I blame Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind for convincing me that really hard relationships are lovely.
So you went into, how long was the painful relationship then? Not a long one, I hope.
Well, when my name changes to Kegel.
Oh. Okay, I'll keep an eye out for that. Great. The name change is how we track the different Emilys.
This one, it's like alert, alert.
Okay, all right, good, good, good. We'll keep an eye out for that. All right, Emily Leary, let's go through now to 2005. We've got some linguistics stuff going on here. Projects in Linguistics, A Practical Guide to Researching Language, Neuro-Linguistic Programming for Dummies. Tell us about this. What's going on here, please?
So I did stylistics as part of my English literature degree, so where you're learning about kind of the grammatical construction mm-hmm. of sentences and how that affects the way that you experience the writing. And I got really into linguistics, so my plan was to study it at master's level.
Right.
But I never did.
Oh, right.
Well, I did. I kind of half started it and then I thought, nah. As you can tell, I'm really, really committed to organised things.
I'm just really hoping you don't walk off halfway through this podcast. Just might get distracted by a fly on the window or something. It's amazing. But neuro-linguistic programming is one of those things. I had an NLP session once and it was quite interesting. Do you think that it's one of those things you learn and think about? And basically, every time you have one of these ADHD moments, you're adding another layer of sediment to yourself so that actually when you end up doing the thing you want to do, you've got all this experience. And actually going off on all these what might appear to be dead ends, actually that's very enriching, isn't it?
My sister used to say about me, if someone was kind of like, hi, how's Emily? And she'd say, oh, either prime minister or homeless, who knows? Because I would like shoot up like a star and then lose interest or not be able to cope for some reason and move on to something else. And it was always like a sidestep or a step up. I was quite lucky. I never really went back down.
Yes.
But I think that embracing that eventually in my 30s is probably how I've managed to stick at, you know, kind of food writing and blogging since 2011, because I think finally I realized that actually it's okay if you get bored really easily and you need to flit around, and sometimes you're all about creativity and sometimes you only want to do admin and eat chocolate. And if you build yourself a career and a life that allows for that, then it's fine.
Mm.
What I was never any good at is being like everybody else.
Yes. Yes, very good. Very good. And
see how I can flip it so it doesn't sound like I'm a waster?
Yeah, exactly. You're not a dropout. you're just going along the trestle table of life. You're at the buffet of life. You're just having a sausage roll from that plate. And then, you know, probably you don't want to talk about sausage rolls, because actually there's not much sign of food at this point on your Amazon purchase history, which obviously is one of the main things you're all about now. So when did the food thing and linking that into your profession happen?
Oh, well, I started my blog in 2011. So I was pregnant with my daughter. So I already had my son, who was two. Mm-hmm. And during my first child, I didn't really get involved in the whole parenting community. I didn't really make a big thing of my pregnancy. I think there's like one post of the scan and that's about it on my old Facebook.
Oh, wow.
I was working in quite a male dominated marketing environment, so I kind of like, oh, by the way, I'm pregnant, but we'll put that to one side.
Mm.
So when I had my daughter, I really wanted to celebrate that and be like, hey, I'm a parent again.
Yeah.
And kind of and start to actually own that side of my life. But in a kind of very not feminist way, I thought, oh, well, nobody will want to hear about it in my main profile, so I'd better create a separate one to talk about babies and breastfeeding and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I did, and that's what became my blog. And just because what do toddlers want to do all the time? Well, they either want to play the same game over and over again, or they want to do craft, or they want to bake. So I just did loads of baking because I like baking mm-hmm. and tastes nice. So we started to photograph that and put it on the blog. And what had started off as a kind of, I'll just write about being a parent and it'll be a nice way to kind of keep my brain busy and not feel completely cut off from the world while I'm birthing a human.
Mm.
It kind of turned into this very food dominated space. And the more I wrote about food, the more I cooked, the happier I became.
Do you think that must have been quite tricky for you becoming a parent when you have up until this point dipped in and out of things? But now when you're a parent, that's not really something you can dip in and out of.
Yeah, you can't kind of do it for 18 months and then go, actually...
No, it's just not. It's tricky. It has legal ramifications.
Maybe if I just went for a different kind of child, this one isn't really working.
Exactly.
It certainly forces you to settle down. I mean, my marriage to my son's father broke down when he was tiny, like a few weeks old. I know, unheard of for me.
Mm.
And then it was just me and my son. Yes. So I had to be very responsible and very organised. You know, I couldn't be moving every 6 months and because I fancied it, different city.
Yes.
So I had to become more responsible. And we became a very well-oiled machine. You know, he went to nursery and he came home and, you know, we had a routine and everything worked. And then I would drink about 10 cans of Diet Coke so I could do my work in the evenings because there was never any chance to do it elsewhere.
You need sleep. No.
When I met my husband, he kind of didn't quite fit in because I wasn't really planning anyone else. It was kind of working just me and my son forever against the world.
Yes.
That was a big change. But he is a very organized person. So I was the kind of person who used to get up at 10 to 9 to pull my clothes on and run down our street to our school, which is only around the corner, because it was around the corner. Mm. He used to get up earlier. Mm. My husband is the kind of person who gets the kids up at 7 so that they can leave the house at 8:30 to walk the 10-minute walk to school with plenty of time.
It's the perfect match.
Yes.
The yin and yangs is the dream ticket. Dream ticket. All right, well, we'll get on to when you meet him, because we're still back in 2006 at this point. Emily Cagle.
Yeah, I'm married, yeah. Mm-hmm. I got married for the first time.
Yeah. And you buy on the 13th of November 2006, the Highway Code and the official DSA Complete Theory Test Kit.
Yeah, guess how my driving lessons went?
You did a couple and then thought, nah, not for me.
Oh my God, I'm such a failure. It physically frightened me driving. I was actually not bad at it, and they said I was ready to take the test really quickly. Mm. Then I got pregnant in the February maybe of 2007.
Right.
And so the steering wheel was moving further and further away.
You need longer and longer arms, telescopic arms like Mr. Inspector Gadget.
And my sensible brain, my kind of nascent parent brain, was saying you really should be able to drive because you'll need to drive your children around. Yeah. And my much overriding brain was going, but I don't like it. Mm. So I stopped.
You don't like being told what to do.
No.
This is the thing. And with driving, you've really got to be told what to do. Otherwise, it's anarchy and carnage.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got my GCSEs, I got my A-levels, I got good grades, yes. I got a good degree, but I have to want to do it. You can't make me do something I don't want to do.
But it's great because you're so self-aware of this, and that makes, because you can, you know, write your own narrative. You know what you are, you know what you're all about. And a lot of people, things like this would happen and there'd be an element of shame and they'd tell themselves they were a failure. But no, I'm hearing like, this is what I am. That's just the way I am. So I'm going to use that energy for positive things, right?
Yeah. And I have friends who've kind of been in the same career for 25 years. And I genuinely think, but how?
No, I know.
And often they're not actually that happy, but they're happy enough to have stuck with it for 25 years. And I just can't imagine being able to. It's like there comes a point when my brain is no longer willing to function in relation to that particular task or topic, because it just doesn't like it.
You're creative. You're a creative force, Emily. And look, in 2007, this is interesting because you have just alluded to the fact that when you had your first child, you kind of didn't jump onto it and become one of the, you know, mummy brigade, for want of a less awful expression. I don't know where that came from. But it's true, because what normally happens is when people have babies, certainly on their Amazon, the number of things they order goes through the roof because they're buying all the paraphernalia and the kit and they're, you know, sort of filling their house with an arsenal of baby caring stuff.
Yeah.
And this isn't me saying you don't have the kit, you must be terrible. This is me saying it's interesting that you know, you just seem to glide through it without. We've got a few things like Mirror Me, the Baby Einstein book, Faces, Baby's very first book. So some gorgeous, I love those first books for babies. They're so beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah. So, and I clearly wanted to stimulate his mind immediately as soon as he was born.
Well, you also bought on 4th of September 2007, Introduction to the English Legal System. So he would be very advanced for that.
I actually, for fun, took a law course with the Open University.
And it wasn't in order to facilitate the divorce that you knew was coming.
As you know, I'm not entirely clear on what I want until my 30s. So I thought I'll just study a spot of law. So I did an equivalent to kind of first year law course. I mean, it comes in very handy when clients are being unpleasant. I think, hang on a minute. I remember reading a case about this.
Yeah, I know some tort. I've read a John Grisham. That's all I can do. This is absolutely fascinating. So you dive into law. So you have a baby and think, I know what I need to do. Become a lawyer. That's what needs to happen now. And so how long did you spend on this project before you...
It was a year-long course, and I did do the course.
Right.
And it wasn't like, you know, it was part credits towards a degree of your choosing, because that's kind of how the Open University works. Mm. So I could or couldn't have taken it further. I think probably I was thinking a little bit as well that because I'd left London, I was setting up completely on my own, and I had never run like a limited company with staff before. Mm. So rather than just kind of spending half an hour with the solicitor, I just decided to study law for a year.
To get ready. So when did you and your then husband split up?
It will have been... So my son was born in November 2007, by Christmas.
Wow. That is, I mean, that is, that it's a very tricky time when you have the baby.
Yes. And I think it was a, let's just hold on until the baby's here. Let's see if things get better. Yeah. Newborn babies do not make strained relationships better. No. It turns out.
They really don't. I think the first year with my eldest had terrible sleep problems. He had colic, and he didn't sleep for more than 3 hours for the first 4 years of his life. And my wife and I think God willing, that's as close as we ever come to splitting up, but it was really difficult, really hard. The sleep deprivation and just the noise, Emily, the screaming of this baby. It means, you know, all your conversations, what used to be free associating chats and thoughtful connections with each other, you just become like business partners, exchanging information.
Yeah.
It's so strange. Yeah,
very much. And because even that sleep that you have is kind of with one eye and one ear open, ready to leap out if there's a problem, you kind of do go mad, and you have that kind of wounded feeling all the time, like everything is against you. So even if your partner kind of says, oh, did you want a coffee? It's like, I'm sorry, is that a problem?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why I'm cross with you. I'm sorry, but also I hate you.
I want, no more. Hello, I'm Jack Beaumont. I do Crime Club. In Series 1, I spoke to people like this.
Did you not kick a policeman in the head?
Yeah, that was... When was that? I was 17. Wait, was I 17 or 19? I think it might have been 19, actually.
In Series 2, I talked to people like this.
There was a paedophile with one leg. I kicked him clean out his wheelchair. About four of us... I mean, we battered him.
And this. Cheated on your boyfriend to give him gonorrhea? Do you want to go there, or would you rather not?
Yeah, no, I could talk about it.
I have jingles like this. Crime Club. That's Crime Club, where strange people tell stories involving bad behaviour. New episodes out every Monday.
My matey bought a toaster.
Well, let's skip on ahead then. November 2008. So your son's now a year. You've got the alphabet 1, 2, 3 coloured soft play mats. Lovely.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we love those ones. Really good. Come on then, count from 1 to 9. I don't care if you're only one. Do it. Also in October, you bought the BlueTrek G2 Plus Bluetooth headset. You see, we're seeing the yin and the yang here. We've got the mum at home putting alphabet on the floor, but at the same time, you've got an earpiece in, like you're going to start running a minicab firm or something.
I mean, this was the classic, I don't know how she does it all kind of era. So I bought this headset, which turned out to be absolutely useless. But my theory was that it would be better than trying to push the pushchair with one hand. So if I needed to do a work meeting, I would, and my son wasn't in nursery or with his grandma, I'd put him in the pushchair and just kind of fly out of the house. Like, 1 second. Yeah. Because babies are generally quiet if you push them around and let them look at ducks and things. So I'd do that. And I had a theory that it would be easier if I was hands-free. But yeah, that headset was useless.
This must have been a very challenging time. So and what is the business thing that's happening at this point then? You've done the law course, you've got the child, you've had the divorce. What is the business that's going on here?
So by that time, I had been kind of in PR and copywriting since leaving uni. So I had quite a few years experience already.
Yeah.
So I was supposed to go back to my job after maternity leave, but I kind of couldn't because I'd moved to be near my mum, because you need somebody to help when you've got a tiny baby.
It really makes you realise how great parents are when you have kids, yes.
Absolutely. I genuinely don't think I could have survived mentally without my mum at that point. So I had to set up my own business and kind of go after more kind of regional clients, which is really hard because, as I said, only recently that anything started happening in Lincoln. So I'm trying to run this kind of nascent PR, copywriting, marketing, whatever you want, mate, kind of business.
In
Please
Lincoln.
Give me some work. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. PR in Lincoln. I mean, what are you putting a spin on? What are you PRing? What are you marketing at this point?
It's very difficult. There's a lot of companies that are kind of like, we've hired somebody new. It's like, cool. Can we get that in PR week? It's like, probably. Not, isn't that...
I mean, it won't be a headline, but I can try. Okay, so you're pushing that boulder up the hill at this point. So we're not you've not become the multi-limbed food, lifestyle, parenting writer and all that stuff at this point. Lots of books, April 2008, lots of books for the little one. The Very Funny Fish, The Very Ticklish Tiger, The Bedtime Bear. This is all bought on the 29th of April. You bought like 7 books for your kid in one session. Was that like a, right, come on, he needs a library now moment?
So is this 2008 or 9?
This is 8.
Okay, so... my son was speaking and responding to like the rhyme words so young that it actually frightened my mum and I. So we had him on my hip. I don't think he's even quite one.
Please tell me he's called Damien.
I don't usually share his name, but I have to because it's relevant. He's called Joel after the character in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
No way.
You know, see how it's all coming around.
You see what we find out when you shop for mystery. Gorgeous.
So we're walking around my little flat in Lincoln. He's on my hip, he's on mum's hip, and we're singing all the usual songs. So like, you know, down by the station early in the morning. And my mum went down by the, and this tiny little baby goes, station. And we're like, what?
Oh, that's so spooky. Goes,
early in the morning. We're like, what?
What? That is, kids are, everyone says how magical they are. They are terrifying.
He was so smart and so, and he was quite a skinny baby, so he looked quite young. So, by the time he was kind of a young toddler, he'd be having full conversations and I'd be chatting to him in his pushchair and people would stop and stare.
Yeah.
Like, how is this tiny little person? And he's quite unusually well-spoken, probably more well-spoken than me for some reason.
Right.
And so he'd be like, yes, mummy. And that sort of dinosaur, and it's this tiny little baby, and he'd identify all of the car badges and all that kind of thing. And he was just, he could not get enough information. He still can't, he's 12 now.
But this is you, right? This is you. Because look at everything you're buying on this thing. You've got, bang, getting your message heard in a noisy world, 12th of January, 2009. You know, you are, and you're putting the public back in public relations, how social media is reinventing the aging business of PR. That's from the 8th of March, 2009. And this is you. You've got a lot to say. You're shouting at the world, right? You are ready to make a mark.
Well, this is actually, I think, so my son is autistic. And I think actually, if you put me through the whole diagnostic process. I mean, look at me. I probably am too. There was certainly a lot of nodding when we went through the whole process with my son. I was like, really? Oh my God, that's me as well. But when I discovered that people wanted me to do their social media is people behaving, but it's on a screen and you can see patterns. Love it. Oh, so I took to that really well and started to get quite a few clients in that space who wanted PR but wanted it with that digital first, new media as it was called then, kind of angle, where they wanted to understand how to harness these kind of real conversations. So that became my specialism and was right up until I quit it all to do my blog full time, but that was several years later.
I must admit, looking at your website, amummy2.co.uk, as I was the other day when I was researching you. I mean, I say researching you, I was just looking at your recipes going, yes, please. Your website's absolutely mint. I was just like, I actually took a screen grab of a couple of things to send to, weirdly, my father-in-law is designing my website at the moment. So I was like, God, she's fucking good at building a website. And yeah, okay, that all makes sense. That all makes sense. So when did your son get diagnosed with autism?
So I kind of knew because my mum, she's retired now, but she's a childcare lecturer. Right. So I helped her study when she was studying for her degree and stuff. So I had seen all the kind of Baron Cohen study into theory of mind and stuff. So it was
Which
kind
is Sacha
of
Baron Cohen's dad,
mind.
Isn't it?
Uncle, I think.
Right, okay. Fine,
yeah.
Fine. It's a weird connection, but yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, very weird connection, but an unusual enough surname to notice. Mm. So I kind of noticed when he started to do things like organise cars by colour, learn all the car badges, know everything. So he can hyper-focus and learn everything there is to know about a subject.
Right.
And so I kind of always knew, didn't take him for any kind of formal diagnosis until he started school because, much like his mother, it's once you put a different mind into a setting that requires certain behaviours that the differences start to show.
Yeah.
So that's when we kind of, I mean, he doesn't need a diagnosis. It doesn't make any difference to who he is. But in terms of how the world treats him and to make sure that he's treated fairly and that certain behaviours aren't misinterpreted as meaning things that they don't, it was important to have the diagnosis.
Mm. And does he get on okay at school then? It's all going okay?
He's just started secondary school, so guess how that's going.
All right, okay, let's move on, Emily Leary. We're going into 2011 now. So by 2011, there's loads. September 2011, the Octonauts action figure. Love a bit of Octonaut action. Yes, please. Facebook application development for dummies on the 1st of September 2011. So here we are. You're working up this this PR machine. So you're not the blogger yet, are you? You're still working for the people at this point.
Yeah. So 2010, met my husband at the start of the year.
Yeah.
Married him at the end of the year.
She don't hang around.
Well, I've been with my previous husband for like 6 years before we got married, so I thought, you know, when you know,
you just know. You do, you just know.
Yeah, yes. We've been together 10 years now, so it was fine.
Yes.
Yes, so I had done that, and then I went to work for a big telecoms company in London, probably the biggest. Who could it be?
I wonder.
Doing their social media strategy, and then was about to move back into London with my husband, thinking we can just about afford a flat, you know, like Crouch End. Maybe we'll have to sleep in the living room and fold the sofa bed up, but we can move back into London.
It'll be romantic.
And our son can have a bedroom. It'll be fine. Obviously, we were married, so we hadn't been being super careful, but I thought, I'll just take a pregnancy test. It was negative, all fine. And then we went and we found the perfect flat in Crouch End, and I gave my card details, but I said, but don't put them through until Monday because I get paid on Monday, and then there'll be enough in there for the deposit.
Yeah.
And then I got home, I felt a bit sick, so I thought, I'll just take one more test. And that was our daughter.
Oh, my word. When was this?
Beginning of 2011. Right. So we'd literally just got married. So I was having to phone this estate agents and leave calls going, maybe don't take that deposit just yet. So suddenly the plan to move to London was cut short, shall we say.
Yes. Wow, that is dramatic. That is dramatic. Like looking at the two lines on the pregnancy test.
No. It was quite, yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because maybe there are people who genuinely want a baby so much that when they see the two lines, they're not scared. But that's never happened to me. Even though I wanted both children, I still looked at the pregnancy test. And, you know, when you go from kind of normal body temperature to about 110, that's kind of a whole new person. It's going to be fine.
I know. So a sliding doors moment there saw you nearly moving into London. And then suddenly your daughter dragged you out of the M25 and you ended up where? So near Nottingham. Is this where we are at this point?
Yes. So my husband is a designer and he got a job for a record label in Nottingham. So I said, OK, well, we might as well do Nottingham for a bit. And I got a job at a big utilities company instead, which is in Nottingham. Which one could it be? So doing the same thing, social media strategy. By that time, I'd started blogging because my daughter was born in October. So I was doing some blogging while working at this utilities company, doing their social media, getting shouted at a lot. And by the customers, not by my employers. and genuinely just wishing I was at home blogging and cooking and doing things that were much more fun.
Yeah.
And it was genuinely, you know, other people took cigarette breaks and I went to the loo and kind of wrote a blog post for 10 minutes and came back.
Wow. You really had a desire to communicate that, didn't you, and get it out there?
Yeah. You know, and I'd spent so long by this point working with companies and working out what their personality was and how they were going to manage answering customers and how they're going to engage customers so that customers wanted to think about them and engage with them other than when, you know, their line was broken or their electricity wasn't working.
Yeah.
So much time doing that. And it was such a battle. There were so many times where, you know, we'd do something beautiful, But for, you know, for the 50% who would appreciate it, there'd be 50% who just wanted to shout about their line not working. Understandably, I am that person now.
Yeah.
I've got kids. I have no patience.
Hello, Virgin Media.
So, but when I publish something as me, you know, here are some cakes that we've made. Here's how we did it. This is what you'll need. Mm. All positive. I mean, not all positive now. Some people can be pretty nasty, but generally much more positive. And being, in the words of Bo Burnham, a self-centered artist, I liked it. People telling me I was doing well every day. Yeah. So I just wanted to do that and not be shouted at.
Did you feel like it was that moment where you went, hang on, this is what I'd be wanting to do? I've been out working for other people and sort of trying to push agendas and ideas for other people and exploring other careers the whole time. And suddenly your daughter turned everything back onto you. And you're like, that's what it is. This is where it is. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird because as a copywriter or a PR or a marketer, whatever, you are behind the scenes. You're not supposed to be visible. So, you know, when somebody watches an advert or reads an article in a paper, they're not supposed to think about the PR that pitched in that story. You know, you're not supposed to think about the social media meetings that went on to, you know, to decide to have a particular quip back about tea, for example, like is going on Twitter a lot at the moment.
Yes.
You're not meant to see the planning that goes on. So I had always been invisible and I was very happy being that. But yeah, obviously at some point in my 30s I obviously reached adulthood and
yeah, but you wanted to be visible. You had an identity that you wanted to put out there, and look, here we are, 2014, right? You spent £88 on the tabletop studio lighting kit. The lights are now on you, Emily. You've turned the lights onto you.
So weird. And I'm you must have, you know, had this the first time you see yourself on video or the first time you hear your voice and you just think, wait, who is that? And if anybody wants to go back to my very earliest YouTube videos, it's really cute because I used to try to lower my voice because I thought it sounded on video so much higher than
in my head.
What do you
mean, like, lower?
So I'd be like, oh, today I'm reviewing.
All right, Nigella, hello.
It's very sweet because you can tell that I think I'm correcting something. And you can see like the earnestness in my eyes. I'm doing my best.
Right. So this is, when did your YouTube videos begin? 20?
Probably quite early. Yeah. Right. I think that there's an old channel, which I may have deleted. And then there's a newer one that's a bit more polished. If the old one is still up, I did a video of reviewing baby Annabelle. So, you know, those babies that kind of cry and they'll suck a dummy and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I sent it. My own baby was quite small. So I'm rocking this baby the whole time I'm doing the review, which is a little bit weird because it's not real. But I'm kind of like, you know, when you do the slight bounce in your arms.
Yeah, so I'm doing
that the whole time. I also speak with it a couple of times. So obviously, you know, just insane.
This is what we all are when we're... when we've got new kids. I remember putting washing into the, I was loading the washing machine on, you know, 20 minutes sleep. And as I loaded, and I put the washing machine into the washing machine, I said to the washing machine, there you are. Because that's the sort of thing you're doing. You're so used to feeding children or whatever. Here we go. Or the classic is to be in the supermarket and you've got a shopping trolley with no children anyway, the kids are at home, and you rock the shopping trolley backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
Because this is what happens to you. Your brain has, you know, there's some new software in there. There's some new software. You know, you're no longer platform. You're now three-dimensional.
The worst thing for me when we had my daughter is my husband is a designer, so he can do quite like heavy metal album covers and stuff. So really like rock, sometimes even gruesome. Yeah. And he'd show it to me and I'd be like, oh, that's very good. No.
Please don't do that. Please don't do that again. The worst one is when you get referred to as mummy by your husband. So the kids will come and say, mummy, what time's supper? And she doesn't hear. So I'll say, mummy, what time's supper?
Yeah.
And like, and then I end up calling my wife mummy. And that's just, that has to be stopped.
Yeah, I think it's okay as long as you don't carry on after the kids have gone to bed.
No, which is what apparently Mike Pence does.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently he refers to his wife as mother. He calls her mother.
We never really use any of our real names in this house. Everybody is called anything. So it doesn't even have to be relevant. It could be like... you know, like bottle of sunscreen. It's just whatever we're looking at is now the name of the person we're talking to. And it's how we know that there's a problem. So if Mark was upstairs and he shouted, Emily, I would literally drop this call and run because it would mean something was really wrong if he called
really?
Emily. Yeah. It's not even cute names. It's just absolute nonsense.
Well, like, so just like an object. So he'll say, lamp, can you...
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think they tend to have like a little bit of kind of comedic, like sibilance or rhythm to them. I remember, I mean, it definitely comes from my family because my older brother used to call my younger brother chunk of cheese and slice of wholemeal bread.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the weird things that families do. I love it. I love it.
We like to listen to Toast, and we're not the kind who would boast. And even in spite of the host, we still like to listen to Toast.
The 4th of February, Minecraft soft plushy toys. Can we talk about my Minecraft, please? Because my eldest has just fallen into, appropriately, a Minecraft cave, and I've not seen him for about the last 2 months. Does it get better?
I think that it is the best waste of time kids can have. If they're, you know, I mean, obviously it's great if they want to kind of pick up a musical instrument and teach themselves to grade 8, but we don't all have kids like that.
No.
I mean, it's... there's lots of kind of maths involved. You know, you have to be able to calculate how many you need of something to be able to craft it into something else.
Yes.
There's lots of planning. There's teamwork if they're working with somebody else, which obviously involves a lot of screaming at each other, but even so. I think it's great.
Okay, good.
And there
are
so many games that are horrible. So
I know, exactly.
Yay for Minecraft.
It's not like Call of Duty or anything. There's very little blood, although my son did show me him killing a dog on there the other day. And I was like, all right, mate, let's not do that. But it's he plays it on his Switch and he goes upstairs and he FaceTimes his best mate, Heath. And they sit together for a couple of hours, screaming at each other, but building stuff. And you're like, hang on, if they were here doing Lego, which is essentially all this is, I would be thrilled. I'd think this is great. They're playing Lego together for 2 hours. So, yeah, okay, good. I'm glad you said that because that does back up my vibes. All right, moving on from Minecraft then. Yeah, look, you've got lots of gadgets here. Awesome, lovely. Oh, a GoPro. £274 on a GoPro in May 2015. Tell us about this.
One of the perks that everybody knows about being an influencer is that you occasionally get sent on holiday. And it hadn't really happened to me because I focused mainly on kind of tips-based stuff and food. And then Disney called, actual Disney.
It's Disney on the phone. Oh, hello, Disney. How are you? Where have you been?
And they said, so we've got this journalist tip taking people to Disney World. And I was thinking, which one is that? They're in Florida. And one of the journalists had to drop out. So can you come to Disney World, Florida for a week on Thursday?
Fudge brownies. What?
And
with the kids?
And I was kind of like, on my own. He said, no, with your husband and the kids. And I was looking and thinking, well, we're right in the middle of the school term. And I was like, yes, we can.
Yes, we'll make this happen.
we pulled everything together and went to Disney World in Florida for a week. So I got a GoPro so that we could... record cool shots. In the end, it just ended up being like wonky shots of one of the children's legs going down a slide. But, you know, the intention was there.
And what are they afterwards? So you make these videos of you at Disney World.
Yeah.
What do they want you to do? Stick it up on your YouTube channel?
Yes, I wrote about it on the blog and I shared it on social media while I was there. And I probably did more work than was required of me because I remember getting back and one of the main Red Top papers, I won't name specifically, had written, their piece came out and it was literally like 2 column inches that just kind of said like Disney World does this and here are the flight times.
Wow, and that was a whole week's holiday just for that?
For their family, yeah. Jeez. And I thought, cool, I want to be a journalist. No. And don't change careers again, Emily.
No, for God's sake, keep her in the same lane.
But the nice thing is my husband is a photographer as well. So we both carried cameras and we kind of took photos together. And that kind of started the travel area of my blog because I realized that we could go on trips either gifted or that we bought ourselves and we could take it in turns to shoot what we were doing so that we could both still be present rather than one of us being kind of working all the time and produce content and still get a brilliant holiday. So we don't do a lot of it because it's kind of, I like being at home. I'm kind of a hermit. This whole lockdown thing suits me fine.
But
it is quite cool. And it is the biggest perk. So a lot of the way that influencers are perceived as getting loads of freebies is really not the case because ultimately why would I want to do 3 days work for a packet of free biscuits? Like, it's not as glamorous as it sounds.
No.
But a week in Florida was
that is
was
as quite glamorous a highlight. As it sounds. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Don't start trying to say it wasn't that good. Actually, it was really exhausting.
Yeah, so much expected of me.
Yeah, exactly. So you bought some quite serious kit as well. 2016, you can see that things are kicking off now. You've
yes.
You're buying all sorts of gadgetry. You've got some... got a microphone for like 550 quid. So this is the yes. life of now an influencer, a YouTuber, a video maker. You are making your own content and sticking out online. We don't need to know the ins and outs of how to do that, but in terms of how that makes you feel, you must at this point be like, I have really, really landed here. This is exactly what I want to do. This must be very satisfying.
Yeah, you think so, but no. So my therapist says, I don't have a lot of self-belief, and I genuinely always think that I could do better. So one of the things that I've really struggled with, having done this since 2011, is I've always got my next goal, but it's very hard for me to actually spend any amount of time enjoying that goal, like achieving that goal, before I'm kind of focusing on the next one.
Yes.
Which is very unhealthy. So I mean, you probably know as a performer, like, just being on TV in some way is probably like a significant goal, but then once you've done it, it's like, yeah, but I haven't done this. Oh, but I haven't done this. So it's very hard. And also, you know, creative people are incredibly insecure. It's like fundamental to our jobs. Mm. It's very hard to think I have made it. And so, yes. You know, when I had a book published, I thought, that's it, you know. But actually, it only took a couple of days, and I was thinking, well, it's not selling as well as her book.
Yeah. Well, this is it. As soon as you get entered, you know, as soon as you're into the next room, you're into the VIP enclosure or the book writing enclosure or whatever, you find reasons to be dissatisfied with that. But it's that dissatisfaction which has driven you to get there in the first place. That's the problem. And you can't switch that off.
No, exactly. And that's always that thing. How much should you tell yourself off in order to be driven forward, but not so much that you're crippled with self-hatred? Mm. And I think, yeah, that's a balance that you've got to find. But one of the things that I have learned, probably by seeing the kids be kind of equally dissatisfied with themselves, is to encourage them to focus on the small wins. So not kind of, you know, when I have completed this entire year, but, you know, kind of, I completed a day of school, or I completed a day of work, or whatever, and just kind of celebrate the small steps. Because, you know, ultimately, I didn't just get a book deal one day. It was years and years of learning, of developing an idea in my head, of finally putting it into a proposal, et cetera, et cetera. And it was all those little progressive steps that got to the point where I achieved something that I considered worthy, kind of thing. So yeah, that's what I try to focus on.
But the point is, and we've discussed this on a recent episode of this, you've got to enjoy that process of all the other learning and you know, the creativity bit. If you think that the fruition of your dreams and stuff coming together is going to make you happy, then you're going to be brutally disappointed. Because actually, the best bit is the striving and attempting and pushing and thinking and working and hunger. Those are the best bits.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is why I've stuck with this for so long, because I absolutely love cooking, and I love the idea of coming up with a recipe and then making it happen, and then the kids not saying it's completely shit, and then yeah, and then
the best compliment you can possibly get. It's not shit. Oh my God,
they didn't scream at me. You know, and then thinking about how I'm going to style it for photography, and then seeing an idea that's in my mind, and I've never been able to draw or paint or anything like this, so being able to create a food layout that looks like it looks in my head, and for it to look beautiful, so rewarding. So I enjoy that whole process. I enjoy thinking about the questions that readers are going to have and trying to answer them. Yeah. You know, seeing my blog come up the rankings, having people message me to say, you know, I made this for my so-and-so's birthday. Mm. So that is like a constant reward. So I love all of that.
Yes. And you just have to ignore the success, don't you? This is the thing you've got to do. Otherwise, you know, you just end up, when you win, you sort of look around for the I don't know, the you think you've got to the bottom of the rainbow. You think, all right, where's the pot of gold? I'm there, I've done it. And it's not there. It's those little moments on the way. Those are the key things. Oh, look, a woman's epilator, electric hair removal, £26.21, June 2017. Now, I didn't know what an epilator was until I started doing this podcast. And you are not the first person to buy this thing. This is essentially a device that pulls your hair out.
See, this is, I could talk about this for ages. It fascinates me that women are so comfortable ripping their hair out. And yet... Yeah. You can genuinely, like, not faking, not wimpy. If you pull out a single eyebrow hair from a man, their eyes will go so bloodshot and they might even sneeze from the pain. And I just, like, how is that not more biologically studied, that somehow we have more much less pain sensors in the root of our hairs? It's really weird.
Yeah, it's so true. I cannot believe there's a machine. It's a torture device. And hilariously, the next day you've bought Germaline New Skin Liquid Plaster. I'm not surprised.
I am a modern woman, and I don't believe that you should have to remove hair. I'm also half Jewish, so I've got really pale skin and really thick hair, and it grows at a rate of about a millimetre a second from my legs. So I kind of don't think I should have to. It comes through, it's irritated, it goes stubbly. You know, like a lot of men have just chosen to have stubble rather than clean shaven. Mm. I was kind of fine with stubble, but eventually it'll start to annoy me and I'll want to do something about it. And obviously shaving just puts you into an endless cycle of discomfort.
Yes.
So I tried waxing strips, but they're fine. Yeah. They don't hurt that much, but it's really boring. And also, if anyone has ever tried to wax the back of their leg, it's quite a contortionist thing.
Yeah, so you're sort of weeping with pain. And also, it's like a terrible game of Twister. It's like torture Twister, essentially.
And then half the hairs are still there, and you've got kind of bits of wax stuck all over your leg that you don't notice, and then you sit down on like a sofa or something and you've just got like sexy kind of like fluff stuck to your legs amongst the half cropped hairs. So an epilator, you don't have to be able to see what you're doing, so you can just kind of mow wherever you need to mow.
Yeah,
and it pulls the hairs out.
Just go quite mowing. The smell
quite fun,
of
though.
Freshly epilated hair.
Exactly, it does. It smells great. And if you do it like on a bed, then when you get up, there's like a snow angel, except it's a gap with hair all around it.
There you go. There's an advert for the epilator. This is what these influencers do, you see. They're trying to make you buy stuff all the time. Loads of TV as well. Scandal, Broadchurch, all sorts of stuff. This is in 2017. You're getting this on your Amazon Prime. What else have we got here? There's so many things, Emily, that you've bought in the last couple of years. This is like a special in its own right.
I got, at the end of 2017, I had viral meningitis.
Oh my Lord.
So I rented a lot of TV then, because I was quite poorly for quite a few months after I got out of hospital. So I caught up on many a box set.
Holy heck, how on earth did that, you know, my father died of that.
Oh no, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, years and years and years ago. My God, Emily, that's so dramatic. How and when did that happen then?
I was on a press trip and I had a headache the whole week of the press trip, but I thought probably jet lag, because we were in the Emirates. So I thought, you know, it's quite a big time difference, and you know, eating different food and all the usual things that you do when you're away from home.
Yeah.
So, and I was reporting on how the airline kind of cooks. So I was in a lot of factories with the kind of the lights and stuff. So, you know, I thought it was pretty normal to have a headache. Mm. Plus, you know, getting given champagne for breakfast and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just a controlled hangover for a week. Yeah, okay.
So I got home and my neck was really stiff, and I thought, well, I've just been on another 9-hour flight, so of course my neck is stiff. And then I felt really, really rough. So I went to bed and my husband was kind of fussing around me. And I said, look, it's the start of the half-term holidays. Just take the kids to the park. I'll be fine. And I went downhill so quickly, but I didn't want to be a fuss. So I called 111 and said, like, I don't want to be a fuss, but I'm vomiting and shaking and I can't move my head. Yeah. And they went, don't worry. And then a first responder car turned up and then a main ambulance. And I wouldn't take my duvet off because I was convinced I was really cold. And then my husband got home with the kids, and of course there's two emergency vehicles outside and loads of people with all the kit around me. Yeah. So I was like, take the kids away quick, so they didn't get scared. I was in hospital for 2 weeks. It was viral, so it wasn't life-threatening, but initially they thought it was in my actual brain, so which is called
encephalitis. That's what did for my dad. God, though, and that just sort of naturally evolved. It sort of naturally came about. Thank God you phoned 111, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really don't like being a fuss, so I was quite kind of apologetic even in the hospital. But yes, when they thought it was encephalitis, obviously that is potentially fatal. And I remember I couldn't see because the lights were too bright. But I remember saying, but it's going to be okay because you found it. And they were saying, it's good that we found it. I was saying, but I'm not going to die because you found it. And they were saying, it's good that we found it. So that wasn't fun. But yeah, I got out about 2 weeks later, but it took months to fully recover.
Of course. Of course it would do. Wow.
So I watched a lot of TV.
I wouldn't call it a near-death experience because I don't want to over-dramatise your life, but do you think that changed your outlook on certain things? Has it changed you?
I think that I've had a really, oddly, quite an unhealthy relationship with food in my teens, as almost all teenage girls do. So, you know, not eating very much and so forth. And then I got IBS in my kind of late teens, early 20s, so I could never settle my stomach. And I ate very little because eating upset my stomach. Mm. And so I got into a mindset of being used to being very skinny and thinking that that was somehow intrinsically linked to my health and well-being and happiness. So it was less about need to be thin because they're thin on the TV and more just I thought that it was important for me.
Yeah.
And I hadn't quite twigged on to that, I think, until I was in hospital thinking, no one ever thinks, oh, I wish I hadn't eaten that cake because then I could easily have been like a size 10 instead of a 12. Oh my God. You know, when you think you're never going to see your kids again, you're wishing you spent more time with your kids. You're wishing you ate the cake and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So even though it was probably only about 24 hours before they said, actually, it's only in the lining of your brain, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
It did make me realize that I needed to be kinder to myself and focus on the things that make me happy instead of holding myself up to these weird kind of body standards. And I know from following a lot of people who talk about body confidence that, you know, even the ones who will take photos with all of their folds and say, you know, it's absolutely okay to be who you are. This is the body that carried you around. It's too late by the time you get to our age to see a picture of a skinny woman and not feel envy, or, you know, to see a picture of yourself not looking your best and feel dislike towards yourself.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, a health scare certainly kind of slaps that out of you a bit.
Yeah, yeah. When you come close to saying goodbye to yourself, it makes you appreciate every second you've got with yourself, no matter what size you are. Okay, look, let's move on to lockdown now, okay? Let's find you now in the last few months. And hilariously, you've bought something which I actually bought, the small dispenser with 10 ultimate chlorine tablets. Exactly the same product. Was it for an oversized paddling pool by any chance and you were convinced your kids were going to get malaria?
Yes, indeed. And As you know, we had to reschedule this because I had a sinus infection. I am convinced it's because paddling pool water got in my sinuses.
Yes, it's really gammy, paddling pool water. But you don't want to empty it every day because it's a vast amount of water.
It is, and you're terrified that your water bill's going to come and then, you know, your local water authority is going to be like, it's all your fault that there's no water left. Sorry.
They use the chlorine tablets. I'm glad, I'm glad that it wasn't anything worse after the... but the chlorine tablets doing their job, though.
I think so. I don't know. There's always that kind of like, are they, though?
Yeah, I know.
Are we just swimming in each other's filth?
Oh, God. And look at this. Here we go. Delivered Wednesday, a Coleman gazebo, an event shelter. Tell us about your gazebo.
Oh, so, you know, there was really good weather. So we were in this bloody paddling pool, and I was really worried that, you know, even with waterproof sunscreen, you know, they get in the water. You can see the sunscreen floating on the water.
Yeah. Goodbye, sunscreen.
So the sun was all... blasting down. So I thought we needed like a cover for the paddling pool so that the sun is not blasting on them directly. It is so hard to find a gazebo big enough to cover a 10-foot paddling pool.
You've done it. You've spent £127. I mean, you spent 130 quid on one, or you could have just moved the paddling pool next to a tree.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big paddling pool. Right, okay. So it's kind of what one spot that it fits in. We've killed all the grass in the garden.
Probably with the chlorine.
So not to allow myself to think that we've wasted money, we've set it up on the like little patch of decking outside of our kind of living room doors.
Oh, nice.
And we've pushed the garden table underneath it, and we've been doing homeschooling in the garden under the gazebo, which sounds really posh. It doesn't look as posh, but let's just pretend it's like super posh.
Yeah, that's a nice image to leave you on. I like that. We have the girl leaving school determined to let her mum let her leave school when she's 12 years old, and then here you are in a garden under a gazebo with your beautiful children in the paddling pool. I like that. That's a good place to leave it. That feels like a success. Listen, Emily, this has been absolutely fascinating talking to you. Thank you for coming.
It's been fun.
Doing Mummy Bought a Toaster. And we can find you, so a Mummy2, that's too.co.uk.
Yes, yeah. And it's a Mummy2 everywhere on all social, or you can just search for Emily Leary, and hopefully no other Emily Leary will become more famous.
No, well, let's hope not. I find that highly unlikely. Emily, thank you very much for joining me on My Mate Bought a Toaster. What a brilliant chat. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Why do we have to park again?
It's the same always. Oh, the fantastic Emily Leary, who is on all the social media as a mummy 2TOO. Go and check her out. She's absolutely delightful. And what a story she has. That's it for another week. Thanks for listening. And do you want to come back next week? Yeah, it'd be great if you did. Thanks. So please do subscribe. Thank you. Bye.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter @FriendsWF.